Hello and welcome to the Dad Jeans Podcast. My name is Didon, and along with my co-hosts Brian and Harris, each episode we'll try to unpack, examine, and discuss the DNA of healthy fathering. While all three of us are fathers, the road to fatherhood has been different for each of us. It's our hope that those differences and the perspectives they bring will only add to the conversation. Thanks for listening. In this episode, we welcome father, author, and computer engineer Will Mapp to the podcast. We unpack our feelings the day after the elections, and we talk about the role that technology has played in our fatherhood journeys and how it impacts the lives of our children. But before we get into all of that, let's check in. Fellas, what's good?
What's going on? What's going on, man?
So for those of you who are listening at home, we record on Wednesdays. And this Wednesday happens to be the day after the election, or at least the day that we call the
Democracy
election.
Time?
Super Tuesday. And so what we normally do when we have a guest is we check in individually and then we bring our guest in. But since we may have a slightly different format for our check-in, we want to take a moment to introduce our guest early so that he could participate as well. So Harris, why don't you do that?
All right. So today we're having one of my great friends that's going to be joining us today. This brother is an engineering problem solver with experience in the financial defense supply chain and civic industries. He specializes in the design and architecture of high transaction automated data processing systems. He has successfully led over 20 large scale projects that have saved millions of dollars for the commercial and government type organization. I'm just trying to say, put your hands together for my good friend, William Mapp III.
All right.
Yeah.
And Will, for those of our audience who don't have LinkedIn, could you tell us what you do?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what I do myself. My mom thinks that I just fix her Netflix.
Okay.
She pronounced Netflix.
Wait. Did you say flick?
Yeah, Netflix. That's how she pronounces it. She calls it Netflix.
All right.
Basically, I build software systems. In a nutshell, that's what I do. People have either come to me or my company or the company I work for now, and they come with us with a problem that they think they can have a technical solution for. And so I like to say I draw big boxes and draw lines between those big boxes and then manage an engineering team to actually fill in the code, write the code for those big boxes. That's what I do in a nutshell.
Look forward to digging into that. But
I just want to say the way I know him is he makes the world better.
Okay. No pressure.
So Harris knows me from way back, and he knows that I've dedicated my life to using technology to solve problems. Like, that's why he said it, because he actually knows that, like, I've committed myself to helping people using tech.
So. Nice. Way to clean it up for your boy, Will. I like this. I like this.
That's what friendship looks like.
So we're going to dig into what Will does and our topic of the day a little later. But let's check in. And Harris, why don't you start off?
Oh, man. So how am I doing? Well, I'll actually talk a little bit about the election. So I decided to go on a social media fast. So right before the election, I took Facebook off my phone. I said, the only time I'm going to be on Facebook is when I'm sitting at a computer. And I'm just, even certain text messages, I had to put on mute because my people were talking about it. And I said, y'all aren't going to stress me out. Y'all are not going to stress me out with all this talk. And I'm glad I did it, because now, you know, a day later, and things are still being tallied. I just didn't need all the false information and projections. So my anxiety is a little high. It's lower than it was last year. But
last year or last election?
I'm sorry, last election. Excuse me. It's probably lower than last year, too. But it's just, I'm not in a meh space, but I am cautiously, I don't know, just reflective, just trying to make sure I'm gonna be okay. I mean, we're gonna be okay. Like, no matter what, how things play out, we're gonna be okay. But a lot of things are just changing. Democracy is facing, I feel democracy is facing some challenges. We have things just playing out how they haven't played in a very long time. And I'm waiting to see. It's funny. Just one more thing. A lot of people talking about, oh, depending on how things go, either way, things could get crazy. It could get violent, you know? And I don't know. In my community, I don't think that that's going to be the case. You know, in my community, we have a lot of ex-military. We have, you know, a lot of people who that would say try Jesus, but don't try them because they throw hands. Okay. So I think I'm going to be okay.
Let me ask you this, Harris. You said you got off of social media and you mentioned Facebook because of the false information. What are the circumstances that you could see yourself coming back to Facebook?
I don't know if I ever want to. No. yeah, I mean, these algorithms are very strange. So just to see what would happen, I liked the political candidates, advertisement, just to see what would happen. And I think I broke the algorithm. Like, they don't know what to send me now. Wait, what is he interested in again? So just feeling the manipulation just really rubbed me the wrong way. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna go back.
And I hate to keep lingering with you, Harris, but you use the word algorithm. What do you mean by that?
So, man, I'm sure Will can give a much better description, but essentially, it takes your data, and based off of your data, there are equations that are created for them to say either we want to push you in this direction, or this is what this person would like, which could either push you towards spending money or spending your time. One, if not multiple of your resources being pushed in a particular direction.
Got you. Okay. B, how are you?
I'm struggling to find some words, some energy, motivation, because in looking at the projections of just how we are totally divided. Like, I can't find any joy in anything right now, because I'm really just trying to be realistic and not accept, you know, an intermediate joke to kind of get me through the next hour, you know. And I'm really just trying to be honest, right? And not just have some false equivalent of comedy just so I can sleep at night. Like, half of this country still decided to go ahead and put their vote in for an individual that clearly is racist. So we live in a society in which we already knew was racist, but to see a large portion of the map just red. You know, I am proud of my home state of Wisconsin, which flipped today. That was a shocker to me. And so, you know, I know that we're not on the part of talking about what's giving us inspiration, but I don't think that we need to follow a traditional path with this pod today. So that's what's giving me inspiration. That's what actually gave me the motivation to actually come to the pod and do this. And, you know, so, you know, the social media aspect piece wasn't that difficult for me because I'm already filtered from that. The hard part was I stayed away from all the news yesterday, and so I was able to sleep well. But the hard part was the first thing I did in the morning was check to see what the projections were. And then I was just in a tailspin of from about 8 a.m. to like now, as I'm doing this pod, I got ESPN going on, but I got CNN on my phone to see what's going to happen in Nevada. So it's like, how do I get myself back to being able to be at a good equilibrium? But yeah, man, I mean, that's just, you know, that's what we, yeah.
Let me ask you this, B. Were you surprised?
With Wisconsin?
No, just with where we are right now. Like, you sound like someone who just got a revelation.
No, it's not that at all. It's, you would have thought that with the social unrest, with some of the tides that we had seen in, you know, factions coming together to really impart change. And the fact that I work in the DEI space, you find yourselves around a lot of allies, but then you have to also look at the 100-yard view and say that you're still in silos when you do this work. And so it wasn't necessarily a revelation as much as it's just a further understanding of the complexities of, you know, this is not, and it has never been, and it will not be a United States. And then, you know, I was just thinking about my son today too, and yesterday, you know, as we think about what the world is going to be for them, and climate change and race and racism and gender equity, like all of these different things. So it's not a revelation. I think it's more so the perspective of looking at it now as a father. When in 2016, I was looking at it as a single guy that was about to get married and, you know, understanding the world from that context.
Sure. I mean, even the way we cross the street is different when we have our kids in our hands.
Tell me about it.
One of the things that you said that was interesting is being in the D&I space and allyship. Well, one of the things that I believe, particularly if you take a look at the who voted how, is that we don't really know who our allies are.
That's true.
And in many cases, our allies are not our allies.
That is true. Because one thing Trump said, and I think that it's important for some light to be shed on it, is that folks that go behind the polling boxes are going to vote him. But outside the polling boxes, they're going to champion democracy. And that's so interesting because, like you said, you don't necessarily, as you shouldn't know, but you're not going to know, you know, who your allies are. So it's just, it's not shocking. It's just, it's sad. It's defeating. And I've talked to a number of people today that are feeling the exact same way. And most of those folks look like us.
It's funny, man. That's how I was last year. Oh, not, I keep saying last year, but last election. And, you know, maybe that was the case because I did have my kids. And yeah, I can completely, I can really empathize with this notion of, you know, what does it mean for them? But I think this time around, since that was my blow, this time around, I'm still have to do my work anyway. You know, I'm not saying that for you, but just saying that's where my head is at is I still have to make sure that, you know, even when they read their history books, still jacked up. You know, history. Yeah, I still got to go behind and say, hey, these are the notes you got to write in the margins. So, you know, one, how to pass the test. And then two, what's the real truth? So.
Yeah.
So, Will, I hate that this is your welcome to the podcast, but I'm interested in your take. How are you coping, or are you coping?
So I can't complain. So I'm okay. I was actually talking to Harris a little bit earlier today, briefly, and I run thought experiments. Like, I run thought experiments all the time in whatever I do. And I've sort of prepared for an outcome that we're seeing today. And so, you know, for me, a little bit about my background, like, I'm a country kid. Right. And I'm talking about one stoplight country kid, stories from my parents about how they were treated when, you know, there are younger people and teenagers in the country. And so, like, I have a disposition of this doesn't surprise me. You know, it really doesn't. And it could be a little bit cynical, but, you know, a big part of me is that, you know, I still have to go out and do the work. One of the positive bright spots for me is that with my two kids, they were born with Obama as their president. Like that is their reality. And so even though, you know, I look at the outcome of this election is still tossed up in the air, do I feel a certain kind of way? A little bit. Am I surprised? No, not really. And you know, I just keep on pushing. I have friends who are of all shapes and walks of life. I hang out with a lot of people that live alternative lifestyles as well. And unfortunately, I know some people who are racist that they don't know that they're racist, you know? But you know, I keep moving forward, and I believe that I have a Pollyanna outlook on human nature and people, and that over time we get better over time. And this is just one of those eras that for Black folks, you know, this is our century that we're starting. And this is one of the things that we have to fight and battle against and continue doing what we do and have done historically. And so that's kind of how I'm feeling about it.
Well, you said a Pollyanna outlook. What do you mean by that for our listeners? Unpack that for us.
Yeah. So for me, like I like people. I'm one of the few technologists that actually like people. And I've been all around the world, and I've been all around the country, and I've experienced my own instances of being harassed by white people and white police and everything else. But my overarching experience with people is that they're pretty good. I've been in the Middle East and had a conversation with a Palestinian dude who at the start of our trip hated America and everything to do with George W. Bush. But when we started talking, he was like, you know, all I want to do is set up an aerobic studio in Dubai. And that was my dream. And so we just started talking. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, what is up with y'all's government? You know, y'all Americans aren't bad people. You weren't what I expected. And so I just think that somewhere in there, people are inherently good, and once we get into society, it all goes to hell. So that's my Pollyanna outlook on it. Like I used to talk trash about America, but I had a Black president before I was dead, and that was something that I never believed I would see America elect a Black president. We elected a racist president, and so I have my own theories about America about that. But I just have a positive outlook overall. I wouldn't be able to do what I do if, you know, I was in despair about all the crap that goes on in America. I just wouldn't be able to do what I do.
Well, for context, you mentioned that you had children. Could you give us the ages of your children?
I have two girls. They're both monsters. One is 12, one is 9, and they're insane. I mean, like, so like Harris's girls, like they hung out.
I'm wondering what that means for my children. Cool,
but they're insane. Like they're my kids. They're insane.
I got you. I got a 9-year-old. Listen, I don't need the explanation. I'm with you. You know, my main concern is related directly to her. You know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, a movie came out called Waiting for Superman. And what I did not like about that movie is that they prop these schools up as the solution and as the answer, so that when the kids didn't get into a particular school, and the movie is about, you know, really good educational opportunities that only some kids could get into in New York. And so when the kid didn't get into that school, it was devastating. So as it relates to this election, you know, my kid is, I won't call her politically savvy, but she is probably a little more aware than the average 9-year-old. And so when she wakes up and whatever she believed to be the clear outcome hasn't happened, I don't want her to think that her life is falling apart. Now, I would not suggest that it's all the same. I would not suggest that all the candidates are the same. But I need her to know that we're going to move forward either way, and that there's not an option, and that we come from a tradition where, guess what? It ain't many elections that have gone Black folks' way since there have been Black folks in America. So, like, I'm not going to pretend like this is new. You know, so there's that. And, you know, like you, Will, I am an optimist. And what I hope that we can get from this is that I hope that we could move away from the notion that people are doing things by mistake. You know, there was this assumption that the president was elected by a mistake, and that all of these people who formerly supported him understood now that it was a mistake, and that's going to change in this sea change. But no, like, and I don't know, and at the time that we're recording this, we don't know what's going to ultimately happen with this election. But one thing is very clear is that there is a large swath of people who went out of their way to select this person for another 4 years, right? Regardless of his take on the military, regardless of how he treats women, both in his life or outside of his life, regardless of how he treats the elderly or people who are dying. Like, you could go down the list, right? This guy has always been a known quantity. And for those who didn't know, now everybody knows. And still, people have gone out of their way to choose him. And I think that's fine. But I think that those who don't agree with those people, those of us, let me be clear, who don't agree with that perspective, I think it's time that we stop acting like those on the other side of whatever our perspective is, that they're somehow been fooled, or that they're doing something against their will. This is their will. And so I'm interested from a political science perspective. This would be a great time to be an instructor, because I think these are wonderful times to learn.
I can just see kids walking into your class and you got this big old smile on your face and they like, there
let's
he
talk
go.
About the election.
Listen, I pull up the map because this is, I mean, these are learning times, right? Because the reality is, and the sad thing is, that had Joe Biden won with 98% of the vote, people would have went back to sleep. People would have been like, okay, y'all got it. I'm, you know, holler at me in 4, maybe 8, you know? And the reality is the day you vote is just yeah. one day in a continuation.
Yeah. And even if Biden won, we got a lot of work to do with him.
Yeah. It's just to be, you know, I told somebody the other day, I said, this is just triage. I said, the best case scenario, you have a dude who's not a madman stabbing the country with a butcher knife, right? Like, that's the best case scenario, but you still need triage and PT so that we can recover and figure out what it is that we're going to be. So that's that.
I'm reminded, like, you know, Harris said that there's a lot of work to do, even if Biden becomes president. So that reminds me of a quote that a friend of mine had told me some time ago, is that the president is really one man. You really have to look at who that person surrounds himself with, you know, as part of, you know, really how you evaluate someone. And so, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've learned, you can say a lot of things about Donald Trump. You can say a lot of things. I have a very cynical view about Donald Trump. But the thing is that he is one of those people that really, the people who surrounded him are, like, you know, not the best people that you would want to have sure. anywhere near a government. And so, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, that you can say a whole lot of things about Donald Trump, but he can't get everything done. It's just totally impossible in the United States to get everything done by just one person. So who are the people that he's able to bully around and don't, you know, really give him any pushback. And so, you know, when you're evaluating Biden too, like a big part of it's going to be like who he surrounds himself with. But that's a whole other thing. Like if we could talk politics too. Again, you know, but
my only hope,
I'm going to go sit on my hands then.
My only hope is that when and if there is a Democratic president, that the person who he or she surrounds themselves with is representative of the people who showed up for that person when it was time to vote. I think it's time that these stats are in the forefront, and that when the selections are coming around, it's not about who owes who a favor or who you owe or those who were there for you. So on that note, so today we're talking about technology and particularly as it relates to our families. But for the question of the day, I am on a redemption path. I'm going to try hard to keep it relevant and not to make y'all angry at me. So the question...
Oh, man. Oh, bruh.
No, this is a good one. I think it's a good one. I don't know. You tell me.
I'm looking you forward to it now. You could share
a piece of technology, a piece of modern technology with any person in the span of time, who would you share what with? Are you going to give Galileo a telescope? Are you going to give, you know, I don't know, the Egyptians a CAT scan machine? Who are you going to share what with? And if y'all need time to think, I don't mind going first.
Yeah, because you honestly had weeks to think about this.
No,
I
had this in the queue for months.
That's a great question. That's a great question.
I came up with it while I was sitting here. I had a different question.
And you lying. This is probably in one of...
So here's the thing. We never give him a hard time about it being a good or bad question. We give him a hard time about he want to give us something with layers.
This dude just said Galileo and telescopes.
I use that as an example. Who would you share? Like, you could give Harriet Tubman a pair of Air Max, like whatever you want to do.
So then we could be judged by our listeners on, you going to give Harriet Tubman some Nikes?
She could save more people if she didn't have poor footwear. That's all I'm saying. So what I would do.
Wait. Real talk, though.
But you got a good point.
The excellent point.
Everyone would know where she went. They would follow the swoosh. Really, they'd be like, she's been here.
No, because they wouldn't know to recognize the swoosh. They'd be like, what is that? That must be.
Man, how about you just give her an army?
Listen, you can give her like, you give her some shoes. Turn, but I'm gonna answer
yes,
the question.
Yes, please do that.
So what I would love to do is give George Washington Carver access to Google and the internet. This is a man who created 1,000 uses out of a peanut. Imagine if that cat had Google Chrome and Wi-Fi. Like, I think just his natural curiosity and what he was able to do with the resources that he had, I think untold things could be created from that.
You don't think he should instead have administrative assistant so he could have got some patents?
I thought you were going to say so that person can make some jelly.
he said a piece of technology, not a person.
Listen, I don't know how your office structure works, Harris, but yes. We don't typically call
Johnny Five. I'm alive. This is not short circuit, man. This is not short circuit.
You dropped Johnny Five. Oh my God.
I did just do that just for you, man. Will. Just
that's
for you,
awesome.
Will.
All right. So that's mine. Who's up?
All right. So I believe it was Mansa Musa, who also was over, like under his rule, had one of the greatest libraries ever made, which was in Timbuktu, if I'm thinking correctly. Whoever had the library in Timbuktu, I would give them flame retardant paper.
Hey,
think about it. I mean, I'm just saying, you know.
Preservation.
Look. If we would have had their books.
Yeah, George Washington Carver could have read them on Google. This is great. I love this question.
So Matthew Henson, the first person to travel across Antarctica, is a brother, and I said a space heater. And that was quickly shot down because I didn't have time to prepare for this. Now, yes, I know that he does not have an outlet for his space heater. But there are portable space heaters. But you may still ask yourself, Why does he need a space heater? Listen, I don't know. Get him a triple fat goose. Get him some Tims. Matter of fact, let him take a plane to the other side.
Okay, here I think I got it. And here it is. If there was one piece of technology that I could travel back in time, I would take a Tesla and present it to Henry Ford. And with the note that take this apart, figure out how it works, even contact Edison and Tesla himself, because greenhouse gases are going to choke the planet. That's probably the one thing that I could reach out and pick that might be that I would take back and give it to somebody.
So you would change the Model T into a Model Tesla.
That's what comes to me. And I thought of a bunch of stuff.
That's solid. That's solid. It would have changed the trajectory of the world.
So we're gonna have to edit. We're gonna do some serious editing.
it's like all your brain was just drained from this question now.
Y'all emotionally held me up against the wall and punched me in the stomach. So today's topic is technology. And we got a special guest, Will. We talked a little, we learned a little bit about him earlier, but the first question that we typically ask our guest, Will, is what is your 6-word memoir?
Yeah, I actually had to think about this one too after that with that question. Spreading magic and love all over. That's my 6-word memoir. If I had more words, I would have said a whole bunch of other stuff, but that is it. So,
all right, again, so what's that about?
You know, I have this notion or feeling that there's just not enough magic and love in the world. And, you know, what I do is help people ultimately. Like, I help people solve problems, and I try to work on projects that will help people. And by me doing that, I try to spread a little bit of magic and love in the world. When we put together a piece of technology and it works very well, people think it is magic, you know? And that's the reason why that's my 6-word memoir.
Thank you for that. So Harris, this show idea was yours, and specifically Will was someone who you thought would be a good guest. Tell us why.
So I guess about a month ago, if not more now, we were all watching, actually, Dina, I think you told us that your family kind of cornered you and said, hey, you have to watch The Social Dilemma. So because you mentioned it to me, I said, you know, let me check it out. So Mallory and I were watching it, and it also made me think back to the Steve Jobs movie where... essentially, one of the things that Steve Jobs said is that he didn't allow his kids to use tablets and social media. And in The Social Dilemma, they said there are a lot of people who don't do that. So I said, huh. Yeah, these people who are creating, you know, these tools, but they know their potential for better, for worse. And obviously, that's not everybody's perspective. But I say, you know, it would be a good conversation for us as fathers to discuss, you know, how does that impact our parenting? You know, what are our rules? And, you know, are we able to even stick to our rules? You know, does it impact how much time we spend? There's just a lot of... there's just a lot of intersections when we think about technology. So I said, and, you know, I have a good friend that's in that industry who could also let us know if, you know, these things that we're seeing, is it real? Is it hyperbolic? You know, just because it's on the documentary doesn't mean that's necessarily a lot of people's truth.
So Harris, for those who have not checked out The Social Dilemma on Netflix yet, what would be your 2-sentence description on what the movie's about?
Ultimately, you know, I mentioned the algorithms earlier, and how it affects and how it pushes people and collects our data.
What I found interesting about the movie, there was a quote that I flagged because I wanted to share it with you guys. In the movie, they said, "We can affect real human behaviors without triggering awareness." And frankly, that scared me, you know, particularly we're all aware of election season, but we've also had those situations where we talked about, you know, maybe we should go bowling this weekend. And next thing you know, you get a IG ad from a bowling alley and an email from another bowling alley. And it made me wonder, with my daughter becoming more social media aware, like the idea of her behavior being impacted without her awareness and at such a young age, is scary to me. I mean, is that fear overblown, Will?
I don't think it's overblown at all, really. You know, the true fact of the matter, you know, Harris talks about the algorithm, and, you know, that's kind of like the new invisible hand for the 21st century. You know, we live in an algorithm age. The true fact of the matter is that every click, every search term, even where you linger, your eyes linger on the screen, all that information is being categorized and is being plugged in the big, you know, equations or matrices in this case. And they're constantly refined. We live in an era now of artificial intelligence and machine learning where we can consume massive amounts of data and crunch up massive amounts of data and theoretically predict what people are going to be into. I had a friend in college who was a mathematician, and she said everything in life can be represented by a function. And we're starting to see a lot of that matriculate out now. So I don't think your concerns are unwarranted. I do think that with more knowledge and more understanding of how these tools and products actually work, they will help people be better informed on what their relationship is with technology. And I think that's really where the main key is, because there's a lot of good stuff that we get with technology, and there's a lot of good stuff with AI. Quite frankly, I think that we need more people of color, especially Black people, that know how AI technologies work and be in the same room with the people who are trying to build out these technologies. But I just think that having more information can, you know, help you understand, okay, I need to dial this back, or I want my kid to fall a little bit back from getting too heavily engrossed in that. And then there are some aspects where he's like, yes, I want them to know a little bit more about what's going on.
That's real. And I watched the doc, and one of the things that they said that really stood out to me was that they said that there are 30 engineers on the side of that tablet or whatever you're viewing that is working on your brain. And though your brain isn't moving at the exponential rate that these engineers are forcing it to move, it started me to then think about how, when I was on YouTube, how I would watch something and then miraculously I would go again the next day and there would be another video that had some connections to what I had just saw. And I thought to myself, like, oh man, this is perfect. I don't have to search anymore. Like, I type in D.L. Hughley and I'm like, boom, all of this D.L. Hughley stuff. DEI stuff, boom, it was all there. But it wasn't until I saw my son on YouTube looking at Daniel Tiger videos. And I started to see that a large majority of them were PBS Kids clips. But then there were others that were taken from PBS and put on other sites. And he just looked at the image and he would go there. And then it started to just open up into all of these things that were inappropriate. And so when you think about how I saw it as a convenience because I didn't have to search anymore, but looking at how my son was maneuvering through it and how he could then go through this rabbit hole, I then had to pull myself back and say, man, this algorithm is working even without me knowing it. And that is the most scariest piece, because you are being manipulated into taking in content that this algorithm wants you to take in. And so I threw out the idea of my kid, my son. What about you, Will? Like, how often do you allow for your girls to engage with social media? Do they even have social media? Do they have accounts? Like, help us kind of understand, like, as a parent and as a father, how you've approached their usage with social media.
So I guess we can talk about a little bit of some incidences. How about that? That's probably a good place to start. So on the one hand, you know, we're in 2020 and this has been the year of the pandemic. Education has moved to tablets. My kids are in school, but they did not go to school fully until October 26th. But the other half of that is that, you know, they have access to other things other than school. So we started cutting them off at 3:30 in the afternoon, like just cutting off the internet, regardless of whether or not it was social media or anything else, just do something else, you know, other than being on the screen all day. Some of the other things that we've had to do was that I cut my 9-year-old off of her tablet for a week, or we cut her off from her tablet for a full week. No friends, no video chats, just school. That's it for a full week. And that was because of disciplinary action. And so, you know, part of it was, you know, how can we control really what they do, and how can we encourage them to be creative in other pursuits? My 9-year-old does use TikTok. You know, she has created some admittedly very cool videos using TikTok that I'm actually very surprised of as well. And so we do let them do that, but they're not allowed to interact with anyone that we don't know. And so we monitor what accounts they have. We check their friends lists. We make sure that if they are engaged in any type of social chats, that we know the names on that list. And then, you know, probably more importantly is that we're also in, you know, really good communication with the other parents of the people that they're interacting with. So we have an idea of really what's going on. Over the summer, you know, it got kind of crazy because, you know, outside was closed. And so other than outside, you know, they wanted to still interact with their friends, but no one was really letting anyone see anyone. And so they would have their own Zoom chats with their friends. And if it got crazy, we cut them off from that too. And so it became this really new experiment for us because, you know, we didn't have them doing a lot of this stuff online either. They use these things as tools. They may watch a video here and there, but they weren't, you know, really socially engaged until 2020 actually happened.
You know, well, I have to laugh because as I listened to you, I thought back to, you know, a generation ago, the question would have been, do you read your daughter's diary? You know, and you know, my daughter has journals and diaries. I could care less, but I need to know everything she's doing online.
Yeah.
So like online privacy does not exist at all in my house. Whereas she could write down all the things that are happening online in a journal and I would never even think to look at it.
Right. So you say that my 9-year-old has a website, you know, it's karmaiskindness.com. So she's really into this whole concept of kindness.
Nice.
The thing that is challenging for me is that they grow up in this digital algorithmic era. Like this is their moment. And so there are a lot of tools that are really good tools for them to be creative and make things. And
absolutely,
I want to encourage them to use those things. I didn't have a blog when I was 9. I barely wrote. I was probably still coloring in a coloring book. But, you know, this is something that she sees me work in this industry, and she wanted to do this on her own. And it's hard to sit up here and say, nah, because internet, right? Like she wants to do something creative and positive. And so here's the tool and here's how you can do that. It's just we have to monitor it, make sure that no fool was out there trying to communicate with her. And, you know, we have all these parental controls on all these devices if they ask for apps and that sort of thing and they get declined, but it has to be a balance somewhere in there.
So really quickly, I gave my daughter my old Speak and Spell.
Did she throw it back at you?
She said, no wonder you can't spell.
Oh, no autocorrect.
Like, give me that back. You don't appreciate it. Oh, I'm sorry, Harris. Go ahead, bro. Yeah.
That was cold. That's cold, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, man, that was rough. So I think in our house, we talk a lot about, and I think you just hit on it a little bit too. We talk a lot about what our children are seeing, right? How they see us interact with social media. So, I mean, do y'all have any rules kind of for yourself, for you and your wife, how you engage with social media? Do you hide it when the girls are around? Like, is there anything like that? What kind of examples are you trying to set intentionally?
You're asking the wrong guy, because like my social media presence is not it's not the best. Like, I work in tech and I'm not really into social media. I'm bad for that. They see me on a computer all day. Like, this is what I do. And since March 14th, we've all been in this house. And so they will see me on the phone. They complain, how come daddy's always working? Because it's so easy to get, you know, connected and using these products. So like I'm really bad at that. But at the same time, they see me using my computer as tool as well. Like they know that I've written games, like they know that I've developed video games. And so they see me use it as a creative outlet and not just, you know, this thing where I'm using, you know, social media. on the other hand, you know, my partner, my spouse, you know, she's all over social media, and, you know, she's a digital marketing person. So that's what she does. And so they see, on the one hand, you know, daddy has no real social presence on social media except two or three times a year. And on the other hand, you know, they see their mom is like, well, mommy's well steeped in this stuff and sharing pics of me at a Halloween socially distanced Easter egg hunt. So,
husband pro tip. Well, you gotta plug the wife. Right, yeah. Where's she online?
So you can find her at blurredmom.com. She's also a nerdy chick. So blurredmom.com, and she has a podcast that she's the host of as well. And you can go listen at blurredmom.com/subscribe. Ah, I plugged her. There you go.
All right. There it is.
So this question is for all of us, brothers. You know, one of the things, I didn't know what social media meant. You know, when I think of social media, I think in relation to myself, which is Instagram and Facebook. But the definition was really general, and it just kind of referred to any app that's used, app or program that's used to connect people. You know, yeah, so that
LinkedIn,
includes email,
all of that.
That includes YouTube, that includes podcasts.
Zoom. We're using it right now.
Yeah. Which made me think, you know, we do what we said, what Harris mentioned, we take these social media breaks, or we fast from social media, but maybe we're just like fasting from a little corner of it while still exposing ourselves to other aspects. So I wanted to ask you guys, how often do you deliberately step away from your phone?
What am I doing on the phone? I think it's really, here's my thought,
sure,
about it, is that like social media, okay, isn't inherently bad. It's just that there are certain,
correct,
aspects of social media, and we can talk about algorithms too, because like I think algorithms are kind of cool, that encourage people to look at other people's curated life. Like, and I think that's part of the key, is that if you're consuming this stuff, it really is a curated life that you're looking at. And so I think those are the ways that, you know, social media doesn't sour, is that, you know, a lot of people have FOMO and get into depression and all this other kind of stuff because of social media. And there's real research backing that up. But I think, you know, like understanding what your relationship to the thing is, I think goes a really long way. For me, my phone is always connected to me, but my biggest social media program is text messaging. Like that's my thing. I text Harris. I text everybody. I'm texting all the time.
Okay.
That's me.
Let me restructure the question this way, and taking us out, because I know none of you guys would be guilty of what I'm about to say. But remember back when the world was open and people would go to dinner and you would see that table over, like two tables over, where everybody's face mm-hmm. is glowing blue because mom has her device, dad, if there's a dad or another mom, whatever, the couple has their devices, the kids have their devices, and everybody is engaged, but nobody's engaged with each other. And I guess what I'm saying is, as a father, assuming that that's not the kind of relationship that you want with social media and your family, what rules do you have to make sure that that doesn't happen to you? Because I have been that guy who's been watching TV with my daughter, but like, I'm not watching this. I'm going to be on my phone doing whatever. And she says, "Daddy, you're not watching." I'm like, "It's Disney, man. I don't want to watch it." But to her, it's a different connection. Right.
It's important.
I mean, Fiza and I, we've talked about it, and she's called me out a couple of times because it's been the same thing. It's like, we'll be watching something and I'm not interested. But, you know, what's the score on the game? What's the analytics showing me of how many rushing yards? And it even got to the point where I would just put it on the opposite side of Fiza and pretend like I'm watching the game, and the hand would just ease on down just to see what was going on. But it made a lot of sense, right? And it's interesting because it goes back to the conversation that we had about our love languages. Why did she get mad? It wasn't just because I was on my phone. It was the quality time piece, right? And so it made a lot of sense. And the same thing would apply to if, you know, she was doing something, but she was on her phone and I was just trying to get her attention. So I intentionally started trying to leave my phone in another room. But then I'm like, I'm so wired because I'm like, what am I missing? Who texted me? What's the score? And so I realized that I had to take a break of being able to say, this is too much. But I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because I think a lot of times people get stuck in social media being Facebook, IG, Twitter, TikTok. But what the Social Dilemma showed me was that checking your email, LinkedIn, Will just told me to like text messages. Like, I think these are the complexities where we have to really peel back this onion and say, yeah, we can delete Facebook. We can delete all of these different apps. But if we're refreshing our screen every 5 minutes to see if we got that email that we needed to get because we have a deliverable on the next day, or we can't sleep at night because we checked something, and it's in our psyche, and that's what we go to sleep with. Like, these are the mental health pieces that we have to really start engaging in. So
it's funny, man. I love the relationship with social media. I would say the thing that probably eats the majority of my time right now is YouTube. Yeah, I am notorious for finding a topic that I'm interested about.
How to dance like Bobby Brown, every little step.
Sure. Yeah, the Mike Tyson joint.
Mike Tyson was cool. That was cool.
I mean, look, the rabbit hole has no end. So what I do, so I was one of those like holdouts. Like, for me, I remember when Mallory and I first started dating, and she would get mad because she'd be like, "I left you a Facebook message." I'm like, "That's not real communication. That's Facebook. No. I don't check my Facebook like email." And now people are like, "No, I Facebooked you. I expect you to check that out." And I don't like it. It causes me anxiety. LinkedIn. I know, like, especially if you're in the DC area, the expectation is that you might not be able to get a job if you don't do LinkedIn. So I personally, I like to leave my phone in the other room, But then my wife gets mad because she might try to text me to do something. So now she's mad because she can't get in contact with me.
And now we know the real reason why you left your phone in the other room.
Pretty much. I ain't trying to wash them dishes.
And don't let her not be in the house, because then now it's like, don't you want to know if I'm safe? And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I believe in Jesus. And no, wrong answer.
So, yeah, exactly. Sleep with one eye open.
I'm on the couch. Okay.
That was pretty bad. It's like, is this recorded?
So actually what I did was I told her, I said, look, Malik, I'm not going to be on my phone as much. So if it's one of those scenarios where you really do need me, you know, text my mom or, you know, have her just yell for the girls to get me. But I don't like being on my phone because I just know, and again, having ADD, like one little distraction, one little ping notification can really take me out of my groove. So my goal is to not have my phone with me. It's just so deeply ingrained into our lifestyle at this point.
So that's the married perspective. I was dating a woman some time ago in the past, and she said to me, I am not satisfied with the quality of our relationship on social media.
I'm sorry, my stomach.
And I said, just so that I'm clear, are you satisfied with the quality of our relationship in real life? And she's like, yeah, it's fine. I was like, but you are not satisfied with the representation? Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
Now, interesting.
That is interesting.
Bruh, I was like,
So that is a thing.
That is a real thing, man. Well, that's what I'm saying. When you said real life, that is real life for people now.
Yeah, that is a really great point. Wow. You're right.
I'm not right. She's right, and it's wrong.
I'm talking about Harris. The life that you present on social media, that is your outside life. That's the life that other people see.
And to her, it was like, I'm not in this life. And what's up with that? But I don't know. It blew my mind. It literally blew my mind that was even a thing. But
it's a thing.
Apparently it is.
But the thing is, though, I can kind of see her point. And here's why is that, like, yes, there is real life. There is absolutely,
let's say, physical life.
Real life.
No, real life, living and breathing. But yes, okay, whatever.
Okay, all right. Physical life. And there is this impression of your physical life that's then transcribed or shared with people on social media. And so the thing is that, so your impression is, if, you know, I'm hanging out with this dude and he's in my life and I'm in his life, is that, you know, that doesn't reflect, you know, the record that's out there. So I can see that a little bit.
Is that connected to insecurity, or is that connecting to, like, why would one want to do that? Like, I struggle because, you know, the fellas know that, you know, anything I post with my son, I don't post his face, right? Because I want him to be able to have his own digital footprint for the narrative that he wants to share. But you got other folks sharing the baby that ain't even born yet pictures, you know, this is my abuela, you know, like, and it's like, how much do you want to let people in? Like, if you got 1,000 friends, that's 1,000 people that probably don't know you that well.
So you're giving away this
free information.
So the thing is, though, with every time that you receive a like on an image, for a lot of people, that triggers a dopamine hit.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's real.
And that is a real biochemical reaction that's coming in from a digital platform. And so that it's a feedback loop. When people are sharing their images or sharing pictures of their lives and they're like, man, it looks like you're having such a great time. Or, man, that guy is so cute and cool. You know, that is a feedback loop. And is not as addictive as sugar, which is more addictive than cocaine, but dopamine is just as addictive when it's going through your body.
Do y'all think, like, parents, like, I don't know, 20 years ago, was like, you writing another letter? Yeah. They all,
what's the CD thing?
All
what's
you
the
do CD is thing? Write letters.
Oh yeah. All you do is make mixtapes for that old girl.
Oh yeah. Right. Oh yeah. I got that as a teenager. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, screen time is the new, don't sit so close to the TV.
That's true. D, what was you about to say?
So I was going to ask you, Brian, would you have a problem if Fiza's online presence didn't reflect your marriage? Like if it was all pictures of her and her girls from grad school or, you know, happy hour that she went to, but nothing with you?
I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I would be fine with that. I mean, but I think there probably would have been a disconnect if early on in our dating, there was an emphasis on wanting to use that platform to tell a story, right? Because I've dated women that wanted to utilize Facebook as a means of putting everything out there. And it just wasn't something that I was okay with. I'm a particularly private person and I struggle with, you know, finding the benefit in Facebook or in social media, in some social media. But for other people, I mean, they even talked about this in the social dilemma, in that the intent was to bring people together, to bring families together. And it was a caveat, like, yeah, we did that. But then I also invented the thumb like button. Right. So it's like there was the intent on what it was supposed to do, but what it then became. Right. What it then became. I mean, you can get in a rabbit hole by going to IG, and it's just like, that's one of my fears too. Right. Like, you got folks on there putting their whole self out there. And I'm just going to say whole self.
You spent a lot of time on that word.
Because if y'all could see Harris right now.
Excuse me, sir.
Don't be faking.
Harris was just over there reading a book.
I'm writing a letter. At Instagram right now. No.
You writing a love letter to Mallory.
Exactly.
Texting her back. I'll be in there to do them dishes, girl.
Exactly. Yeah. Whole.
So you referenced the movie again, Brian. The Social Dilemma has a correlated website that had the following fact, which I don't think we would find surprising, but was shocking nonetheless. And it says a 5,000-person study found that higher social media use correlated with self-reported declines in mental and physical health and life satisfaction. And it's crazy because IG is mostly like fitness videos and inspirational quotes. So like somewhere along the line, the heightened use of it is...
You're trying to speak it into existence.
It's having the exact opposite impact.
What'd you say? Harris?
No, I said they're speaking it into existence. You know, you have to put it out there. You know, it's like a different form of the vision board. You know, you just put it out there, which I don't believe. All right. So what I really think, the reason why I think it's so different from that is the whole like factor. Because, you know, I do believe in vision boards. I do believe in speaking things into existence. But if it has to be validated, I think that's where the self-doubt and all of that is triggered. And I've just been thinking in general, you know, there's already so many, ways, especially in the United States, that says Black girls aren't enough. You know, speaking about my daughters, I mean, truth be told, none of us are enough when we really think about it. But when we think, you know, we all deal with that. But our children are so susceptible to it. So I know I'm just very intentional. I have to be. But at the same time, and I think Will hit on this earlier, how are we really preparing them for the future? You know, if we don't expose them to it, I mean, we all talk about us running in the street, busting our knee open, and that's how we learned. Is there a digital version of that?
Catfish. Yeah, when you have one of those, oh man, I shouldn't have sent that picture moment.
Which picture, Brian?
Huh?
Which picture? Don't hound me. Huh?
Yeah, I think there is. And this happens with my youngest girl over the summer. You know, people were getting a little crazy. You know, the kids weren't hanging out. They weren't going over sleepovers. They weren't going to the zoo. And some kid said something mean to somebody, and then they just dropped off. Like someone said something, one of the girls just dropped off, never came back. And it took, you know, a small talking to all the parties involved. It's like, y'all don't talk to each other like this in person. You know, like what makes you think that you can talk to each other like this virtually? And it's one of those faux pas that, you know, sometimes people say things they don't mean virtually that they would never say in someone's face. And so, yeah, that happens. Busting your knee open, that does happen. Firing off that email and then putting the recall on the end of it, you know, that happens.
The recall is the biggest setup in the world because it's like, even if you do catch it, everybody see that you took it back. They're, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes me open the email and read it closely.
Yeah, right.
So before we wrap up, Will, I wanted to create some space. I know that you were working on a project or several projects, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so last Friday, I wrote the last sentence of my second book.
Wow.
It's called
Lessons, 7 Brief Lessons on Computing. We're trying to get it out there before the end of the year. It's going out to editing this week. And it's a book that's written for the curious who really wants to know about how computers work. We talk about algorithms in this book, and we talk about AI, and we talk about the abacus and how the abacus was the world's first computer back in Phoenician times. It took a year to write, but it's very, very short. And I'm hoping that the editor can even make it shorter.
Okay.
And so it's a lighthearted read. There's some humor in there. I talk trash about technology. And we do cover social media as well. We cover that. And we cover about the inequality that people have when it comes to technology. Like we have a lot of haves and have-nots when it comes to technology. And the future is going to be ruled by who has either connectivity or who has access to certain types of technologies, AI being one of them. We just need more people in the room for just that one field.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. And
yeah, man, for real.
Mention that it's your second book and not tell us what your first one was.
So humble.
So the first book is The Small Business Owner's Guide to Technology. That was written specifically for entrepreneurs who weren't, you know, very well versed in tech, and it talked about the different products you can use to run a business. And we talk about, you know, cloud storage and that sort of thing, just to get people to be more productive and efficient in running their small businesses.
Okay.
And we're going to get all those links so we can put them with the show notes, right?
Yes, absolutely. Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Very cool. Okay. So moving on to what's given us life. We can't have all this conversation and have nothing on no silver lining on the flip side. So Brian, what's giving you inspiration? You talked about your home state flipping. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to?
Listen, y'all gonna laugh at me, but I'm cool because I'm being vulnerable. I'm taking my son to go see some dinosaurs. I'm excited. Life-size dinosaurs at JFK Stadium. It's you just drive your car through the parking lot, and it's going to be like a Jurassic Park. Now,
JFK or RFK?
I don't know what the name of this fake stadium is out here. I ain't from here. I don't know. It's where that other team played.
Is it in New York?
Good call. It's the one where the Washington football team used to play.
RFK. Cool.
Yeah. That monstrosity of a stadium. So, yeah. I'm just excited. Y'all know I don't get into Wi-Fi or not Wi-Fi, sci-fi. I ain't with none of that. But there's a piece of me that's just like, you know what? This might be the thing. This might allow for me to then talk to Harris about what's the Black Mirror? What's that show you be watching on Netflix?
Yeah. So many. Black Mirror's one of them.
Yeah. But Nas is excited. He's like over the moon. He's been talking about the dinosaurs all week. So I'm really looking forward to just having a weekend with him and Fiza in the car and just kind of just getting excited. And it kind of takes us back to doing that drive-through zoo that we did as well. So yeah, with the racist llama, good call. But this seems to be like the new normal now. Like a lot of events are happening in the car. And so, I'm definitely excited about that.
You know, and shout out to RFK because they're doing a lot of pandemic programming.
Good way to make me feel bad.
No. Last weekend, I went to a drive-in and saw House Party at RFK. So they're really doing a lot. That's getting the community out, but keeping people safe. So,
and I was just about to say, why don't you tell us about that? And then I was like, oh, I got a wife that's about to have a baby and I got a 2.5-year-old. I ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't tell you because you wasn't invited.
Oh, that's cold.
No, but it was dope. Harris, what are you looking forward to, brother?
What am I looking forward to? I'm in a really good space with just experiences like this. It sounds corny, but like this conversation has given me so much life. Good people, good dialogue, a little bit of, you know, thinking through my feelings as it pertains to this work. It just has me in a good space. But I'll add one other piece. My job actually gave us yesterday and today off because of just the... You know, we're in the D&I work as well. So diversity and inclusion, this is not just, you know, a thing for us. This impacts who we are, what we do, how we do it. And either way, they said we need that time to recover or maybe even celebrate. I think recover, period. So give it up for all of the great leaders, managers, bosses out there who just understand what it means to take care of your people.
So. Can I give another shout out as well, Harris, to all of the folks that were counting votes?
Oh man,
late into the evening, and shout out to those organizations, sports teams, entertainers that brought late night meals to them as well. So I just wanted to make sure that we lifted them up too. So
absolutely. All of the people working hotlines, poll workers.
Yeah.
That's all important. Will, what do you got?
Honestly, I am looking forward to the holiday season this year. Most of the time, and Harris knows this, that I'll just be working my tail off, but I'm actually looking forward to Thanksgiving. Just, you know, having that slowdown for a couple of days. And I'm looking forward to the end of the year with Christmas. It's been an interesting year, and I'm looking forward to some merry, merry good cheer. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Hear. So today, Ella and I unplugged for a bit to just get some reading in, and I pulled a book off my bookshelf that I bought. Shout out to the Black Dad Book Club. We read a book by Bell Hooks called Rock My Soul, Black People and Self-Esteem. And I bought the book, but I never read it. And so I was able to dig into it for the first time today. And it's funny how this book, which it's not a new book by any stretch of the imagination, but it directly talks to so many things that we talked about today as it relates to self-esteem, as it relates to the things that we can do, So, you know, the answers are out there. They may be in unlikely places, but if you are at all interested in Black people and self-esteem, check out Rock My Soul by Bell Hooks. So one of the things I'm looking forward to is actually finishing the book this time around. So with that, thank you for joining the Dad Jeans podcast. This has been our conversation on dads in development and technology with our special guest, Will. We love hearing from you. You know, these are tough times, and the words that you give us, the support that you provide us, it really means something. And Will would tell you, it gives us our dopamine hits that gets us through the day. So always feel free to email us. You can do that at info@dadjeanspodcast.com. Of course, that's Dad Jeans with a G. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Dad Jeans Podcast. And as always, if you like what you hear, even if you don't, subscribe, share us, and give us a 5-star review.
5 estrellas.
5 stars.
All right.
A whole 5 stars.
Give them 5 stars. This has been great. This is a great experience.
Absolutely. Please check our show notes if you like more information on the things that Will has cooking, things that his wife is doing. Check out his daughter's website. We'll make sure that there are links to all of that in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, and protect your neck. Peace.
Peace. Peace. Wu-Tang rap. Hey.